Good morning. Glad to see everybody here this morning. I'm going to try to come down to where you are a little bit. Seeing as how my eyes are getting bad and I can't see that far back. But that was a good one to finish up with. We're taking up what topic this morning? Exodus what? 2 through 4, right. Let's open up to Exodus 2. This is a great section in God's Word. Our brother Tom was led us into it last week, and we talked about Israel being in bondage. Didn't start out that way. Started out great. You know, Joseph was second in command in Egypt, and it would have been allowed him to send for his parents and his parents and his kin. And how many did they bring into Egypt? 70, right? 70. 70 souls were brought into Egypt, and God had told his servant that they would be in the bondage there for 400 years. They'd been in bondage a long time. Turned out to be they were actually in Egypt 430 years, and probably those first 30 or so weren't too bad. Joseph was alive, and the Pharaoh that knew him was alive, and everything was honky-dory, you know, and they were up in the Delta of the Nile. Boy, the Delta of the Nile is a beautiful place. You see it from space. I remember seeing one of the early Gemini images when they went over the Mediterranean and they shot down onto to the right. They shot down onto the Nile Delta, and it showed the Nile Delta and all this green, lush vegetation of the Nile Delta. And then it showed in the background the Sinai Peninsula about the color of the back of these chairs, you know, birch brown, you know, or birch tan, and all sand, and way down, right down in the tip of that peninsula was what we see on maps as Mount Sinai. And great picture of the upper regions of Egypt, just lush green vegetation. Even the flannel graph that Brother Dave Stifler has does a little bit of good towards that. But we read last week that Israel got to the point where they were populating the land. And if you remember a couple of months ago, why, as the United States supported Israel in their battle against Lebanon, one of the things that President Bush said is, you can't have a state within a state. Remember that? I heard that comment many times on TV the last couple of months. You can't have a state within a state. And here these 70 people had turned into almost 2 million people. 2 million people. That's a lot of people. That's more than we could seat in the auditorium here. Oh, yeah. Big time. In about 400 years, they had grown. It was 600, we read later, which you'll get to when whoever speaks in the next couple of messages, 603,550 men, 20 years and up, left Egypt. Now, they had wives. Some of them had wives, three or four kids, two or three kids. Who knows, you know? And that's a lot of people. Probably pushed close to 2 million people. Which stadium holds about 77,000 people. Used to hold 80, but then they took a bunch of seats out to make more money. And we're talking 25 rich stadiums full of people. 25 rich stadiums full of people. And Pharaoh says, whoa, this is getting out of hand, you know. And as Tom mentioned last week, Pharaoh gave out the order, if any men were born, any boys were born, kill them. You had to kill the boys. And of course, we know the story from last week of what happened there. So here we read in Genesis, we're not going to have time to read all three chapters here, but they're great chapters. If you haven't read them this week, go through them two, three, four times, because they're great chapters. You'll get a lot out of them. There's chapter 2 and verse 1. There went out a man from the house of Levi and took to wife a daughter of Levi, and the woman conceived and bare a son. And when she saw him, was this her first child? No. How do you know that? Because his sister was watching over him, right? So we don't get the whole story here, but unless there was another wife also, we don't go there. Moses' sister was who? Miriam, right? Miriam was about 6 to 10 years old. We don't know how old Miriam was, but she was old enough that her mother could let her watch Moses in the bulrushes there. So she was probably 8 to 10 years old, somewhere in there. Aaron was 3. He was running around the house. Who knows what he was doing? But he was 3. And it says here that there was a man of the house of Levi and took to wife a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived and bare a son. When she saw him, that he was a goodly child, she hid him for 3 months. So she had this baby for 3 months. 350 years into captivity, or into Egypt, a child was born, 350 years in. And this child, I was thinking about this as I was preparing the message. I was thinking of Annas looking for the Savior coming. And Anna, was it Anna? That was the woman that was there, the aged woman that was there when Mary and Joseph brought in Jesus, you know, to be dedicated. Now let thy servant depart in peace, for I've seen thy promise. You know, and I don't know if anybody was counting the days of 430 years. Let's see, how old would our deliverer be? Would it be born this year or not? We don't know that. But we don't even know if they had been told that number. But here, 350 years into captivity, a child is born. And under bad conditions. He was supposed to be killed immediately. But his mom and dad's, no way, you know, no way. So they hid him for 3 months. And after about 3 months, neighbors are going to hear some crying, well, probably the first week, right, first day. But their neighbors are going to hear some crying, you know, and after 3 months, it gets hard to either control your exuberance or else control your child, one of the two. And it says in verse 3, when she could no longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and daubed it with slime and pitch and put the child therein, and she laid it in the flags by the river's brink. And his sister stood afar off, to wit, well, that's a good phrase, seeing what would be done to him. And we know the story. The daughter of Pharaoh comes, comes to bathe by the riverbank, and she hears this baby crying, and she sees this thing in the bulrushes, and she sends one of her aides to go out and get this thing, and she opens it up, and she said, this is a Hebrew's child. Now, she knew this was a child of the Hebrews. By looking at her, it must have been a difference in skin coloration from the Egyptians or something, or else your normal Egyptian doesn't hide your kid in the river, you know? Maybe that was part of it. But she recognized that it was a Hebrew's child in verse 6. And here's Miriam in the eaves. They're off stage. And she comes up and kind of blends in, and she comes up to the princess, and she says, should I go get one of the Hebrew women to take care of this child for you? And that sounded like a good story, you know. So in verse 8, Pharaoh's daughter said, yes, go. And the maid went and called, who else? The baby, Moses' mom, you know, calls Moses' mother. And she weans him, and she got paid for it. Not only was she allowed to save her child, but said, in verse 9, take this child away and nurse it for me, and I'll give thee thy wages. And the woman took the child and nursed it, and the child grew. And she brought him into Pharaoh's court, and he became her son. And she called his name Moses, for she said, because I drew him out of the water. And in Hebrew, that's what Moses means, drawn out of the water, or to draw out of the water, almost a present active tense. In Egyptian, Moses means child or son. Okay, child or son. There's a couple of blanks on that sheet of paper I passed out there. It means child or son. Son of Ah, child of light. The son of the God of light. That's interesting because one of the things that God did, well, I shouldn't talk about that because that's next week or the week after. But anyway, you know, one of the things that God did was to cause darkness, right? So here's Moses, the one who was named by the princess child of light, and he's going to actually be one that produces darkness under the hand of God, under his direction. So our first blank there on the right, left-hand side there is that he was pulled out of the water. I'm going to do a bunch of P's today. Okay? He was pulled out of the water. And then we don't read a lot about what happened there, but it's interesting that she knew he was a Hebrew. She knew he was a Hebrew child when she opened up that ark. Okay? And as a result, I wonder if Pharaoh knew that he was a Hebrew. He certainly knew it wasn't his daughter's child, because she hadn't been pregnant for 9 months, or for 9 months, 10 months. You know, he was already 3 months old. So he probably found out where the child came from. And we don't know whether Pharaoh was happy about that or not. But for 40 years, why he had this child in his home, in his household, in someplace in the kingdom there, close at hand, that his princess had adopted, his daughter had adopted, I should say, as her very own son. And I wonder whether there was some contention there. you know, in the throne room or in at home over the dinner table, you know. Here's all these million and a half, maybe 2 million Israelis out in the field, Hebrews, and yet there's one sitting at the table at supper time and at lunchtime and at breakfast time. You know, and we don't read of anything like that. Somebody was mentioned talking about, oh, Bruce and I were talking about this yesterday. When I was down at his birthday party. I missed the birthday party, I understand, yesterday, but I was at a different birthday party yesterday, and we were talking about this last night before I came home, and Bruce said, yeah, he said, you know, she knew he was a Hebrew, and Pharaoh probably knew he was a Hebrew, couldn't get rid of him until the right moment came, you know, and 40 years later, the right moment comes, and Moses is exercised about his people. Maybe he was exercised for 20 years from when he was in his 20s. But he turns about 40. Anybody know where we find out he was 40 when he killed the Egyptian? Pardon me? Let's look at that, Neil. Let's all look at Acts 7. Keep your finger here. Acts 7. That's okay. That's all right. I've got a lot of notes in my Bible, too, you know. Acts chapter 7, and Stephen was defending himself before the Sanhedrin. Stephen must have loved the story of Moses. He spent 18 verses just on chapter 2 of Exodus in his defense of himself before the king. And it says here, let's look at verse 15. Okay, verse 15. So Jacob went down to Egypt. He died. He and our fathers, and were carried over into Shechem, and laid in a sepulcher that Abraham bought for a sum of money to the sons of Amor and the father of Shechem. But when the time of the promise drew near, which God had sworn to Abraham, the people grew and multiplied in Egypt, till another king arose that didn't know Joseph, and the same dealt subtly. And this is Stephen now. Remember talking a couple thousand years after the fact, right? And he didn't have a laptop to bring this up on. So they must have talked about Moses a lot in the synagogues. Moses was, you know, you always heard when Jesus was talking, we referred to Moses. And they must have talked about Moses a lot in the synagogues and in the training. And he said that the people grew and multiplied in Egypt, in verse 18, till another king arose, which knew not Joseph. The same dealt subtly with our kindred, an evil entreated our fathers, so that they cast out their young children to the end they might not live. That sounds familiar from last week. In which time Moses was born, and was exceeding fair and nourished up in his father's house 3 months. And when he was cast out, Pharaoh's daughter took him up and nourished him for her own son. And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and was mighty in words and deeds. Interesting. Moses was what? Mighty in words and deeds. And when he was a full 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended him and avenged him that was oppressed, and smote the Egyptian. He killed him, the Egyptian. For he supposed his brethren would have understood how that God by his hand would have delivered them. But they understood not. And the next day he showed himself unto them as they strove, and would have set them at one again, saying, sirs, your brethren, why do you wrong one to another? But he that did his neighbor wrong thrust him away, saying, who made you ruler and judge over us? Will you kill me like you killed the Egyptian yesterday? Oops. You know? Oops. Moses, if you read back in Exodus, before Moses killed the Egyptian, he looked this way and that way. He looked. It wasn't accidental homicide or accidental manslaughter. It was premeditated murder before he struck the Egyptian and killed him. Moses was a murderer by the time he was 41. And you're going to kill me like you killed the Egyptian yesterday? Oops. Where did this guy come from? I thought he was gone already. How could he possibly be watching me? How could he have seen me? Moses' legs, I bet his knees were knocking together. You know, you ever get caught doing something? You know, I hope not, but muscle was really wrong. You should have got caught, you know. But kind of like the time I came on a men's business meeting one night a couple years ago, and I go down to LaBelle, and I put my blinker on and turn right. I go down to Lake Avenue, and I put my blinker on and I turn left, and I make a left on the Martin. I got halfway down by the lumber yard, and these lights go on behind me. Your knees start nodding. What did I do? You know, and he says, well, you didn't use your directional signal. I said, you got to be kidding. Well, I didn't say that, but I was thinking that. But, you know, 2 out of 3 isn't bad, but he wanted 100%, you know. And before I went over to the court and got paid for my ticket, well, I saw eight cops that didn't use their directional signal. But anyway, we won't go there. But that was really a thorn in my flesh, you know. But you know how it feels when you get caught with something, whether it's a speeding ticket or whether it's your hand in a cookie jar when you were little and your mom caught you, you know, or Jorge tells us about the time he swiped something up that was hanging in his dad's store. I remember that one. And he knew he got caught, you know. And Moses had a problem here. And it says in verse 29, Moses fled at this saying. Interesting, you can teach Exodus in Acts, isn't that neat? Moses fled at this saying, I was a stranger in the land of Midian where he begat 2 sons. And when 40 years were expired, there appeared to him in the wilderness of Sinai an angel of the Lord in a flame, in a fire, in a bush. Let's go back to Exodus. Exodus chapter 3. 40 years later, so let's see, 40 and 40 is how old? Pardon me? That's good. 80. 10 years older than Tom, right? Yeah, there you go. They had a birthday party for Tom yesterday, yeah. So he's 10 years old. Well, never mind. He's 80 years old, okay? 80 years old. Not the Charlton Heston, you know, I was listening to, after I got my message together, I went back and I revisited that video we played a couple years ago at New Year's Eve with the Wimpy Prophet and the Burning Bush by Ken Davis. And hilarious. Ken isn't exactly a doctorate of degrees in theology school anywhere, but he had some excellent points of Moses, you know. And so he's purged out of the palace here. Purged out of the palace. That's our next P. He's pressed into the wilderness. And he's there for 40 years. He's a shepherd for 40 years. He was in the courts of Pharaoh as a baby and as a young child and then as a teen and then in his 20s and 30s and gets up into the 40s and he's purged out of the palace because he's killed this Egyptian and Pharaoh finds out about it. You can read that in Exodus. Stephen didn't talk about that. But then he's pressed into the wilderness and he goes over to Midian, which is on the other side of the Sinai Peninsula. And if you know, the Sinai Peninsula has the Red Sea here, and then there's another one up here, and then there's Arabia over here. And Midian is on the east side of that second bay of the Gulf of Arabia. And he sits down at the well, and let's see where that is. It's, I guess this is around verse 15, the end of verse 15 of chapter 2. Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian. Sat down by a well. And this is the beginning of those 40 years. And the priest of Midian had 7 daughters, and they came and drew water and filled a trough to water their father's flock. Don't know whether those are sheep or goats. I looked in about 2 or 3 different accounts, couldn't find it. Shepherds came and drove them away. But Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. So Moses first sat, and then he observed, and then he stood, and he became a man of action to help these young girls who were caring for their father's flock. And when they came to Reuel, their father, he said, how is it that you came home so early today? And they said, well, an Egyptian delivered us out of the land of the shepherds. And also, so Moses was probably dressed like an Egyptian. He probably had his clothes from what he wore when he was in the palace. It didn't look like a Hebrew to them. Probably had the Egyptian accent, whatever that was. And delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds and also drew water enough for us and watered the flock. And he said unto his daughter, and where is he? Why is it you've left the man? Call him that he can have some bread. You know, the Arabs and the Jews, you know, if you've read anything about Bedouins over in Arabia and that region of the Near East, why, they're very friendly people. You know, you're wandering in the desert, you come out of a tent with 2 or 3 tents with people. They'll invite you in and have something to drink and something to eat. They're very friendly people. So the girls didn't do that. And well, where is he? You know, why didn't you have him come home for supper or something? You know, So Moses was content to dwell with the man. And he gave Moses Zipporah, his daughter. and she bare him a son, and he called his name Gershom. Gershom, for he said, I have been a stranger in a strange land. If you go back to Stephen, you'll find out he had two sons, but Gershom is the one that's named. He had two sons while he was here in the desert. And so he was there. He was there raising his kids, and two kids, and his wife, and was there. And he was there for in the wilderness for 40 years as a shepherd. What a challenge from a guy that had been a future prince of Egypt, possibly a future pharaoh. I don't know whether it was a marriage line or not, but a political line. But he was way up there in the cream of the crop. He was up in the top in Egypt for many years. And now he's a shepherd out watching the sheep. And I don't know, if you look at the Sinai Peninsula today, it's barren desert. I wonder what those regions were like. Even if you look at around the Dead Sea, where Lot decided to live, it's all sand and salt, you know, now. I wonder what it was like back then, you know, whether the Sinai was any better back then. But anyway, he wound up in the Sinai, and he may have perhaps even come back up around. Some people think that there's a mountain. There is a mountain also in Midian called Mount Sinai, and there's also hills called the Mountains of Moses. And some people believe that when the Egyptians, or when the Israelites left, when the Hebrews left, they actually went across the Sinai and then across that sea, and were really lodging on the east side of the Sea of Arabia instead of in the Sinai. But that's a whole different thing. Uncle Dave doesn't believe that, so we won't go there. But there's another possibility there, that there's an area over in that area that is where they were. But God definitely mentions Mount Horeb, which is Mount Sinai. So if that was the case, he'd come back up around the land of Arabia, this Gulf of Arabia, and he was down at the tip of the Sinai Peninsula watching these sheep or goats, whichever he had. And we come to this tremendous scene in the desert. Guys, at this point, 78, 79 years old, watching sheep, and he comes upon a bush that's burning. And I think our brother Ken Davis in that video called it the butane bush, because there's a bush that's burning, and yet it doesn't burn, it says in the scriptures, right? It says he was keeping the flock of Midian, or of Jethro, in chapter 3, verse 1. His father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. And the angel of the Lord appears to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. Stainless steel bush. I don't know. We don't know what it was. But it was a bush that didn't burn up. No branches were falling off, like when you burn a Christmas tree or something like that, and outer limbs start falling off. No branches were on fire, but yet there was a flame coming up through this wooden bush. And that got Moses' attention. And he said, I'm going to go over closer and see what's going on here. And verse 4, and as he got closer, God called to him out of the bush. And he said unto him, Moses, Moses, that's going to get your attention too. First a bush that's burning and not being consumed, and then a bush that talks to you. You know, and your voice is out of the bush, you know. And I don't know how God's talked to you. Our topic here today is Moses, God's chosen man. And I don't know how God has interacted with you in your life, in your personal devotions, or whether in a meeting somewhere, at a conference somewhere, in the car, driving to work or to wherever, you know, across country to see your kids. But sooner or later, sometimes in your quiet time, you know, God speaks to us. Otherwise, we wouldn't pray to him. You know, prayer is a conversation. Prayer isn't just one way. At least it shouldn't be, you know. We should be listening, too. And we don't hear anything here about Moses praying or Moses talking to God at this point. Don't hear anything for 40 years of Moses talking to God. But God starts talking to Moses, because Moses is God's chosen servant, as we have in our curriculum for this year. Moses is God's chosen servant. And he's about to expose to Moses a plan. And he needs to get Moses' attention. So he has this burning bush. The flame is coming up, and Moses comes over and he says, Moses, Moses, verse 4, draw not nigh hither, put your shoes off from your feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. Another knee-knocking time. Not just a time when the Hebrew guy said, you're going to kill me like the Egyptian yesterday. But here's an Enoch in time where there's a voice coming out of this bush. And he said, I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, I've surely, great spot here, the exclamation by God, I've surely seen the affliction of my people, which are in Egypt. And I've heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows, and I'm come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land to a good land, and a large, and a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites, and the Hittites, and the Amorites, Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come up unto me, and I've also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppress them. Good news, right? Good news. 40 years ago, he was worried about his people, and he went out to visit them, and he did a dumb thing. He acted on his own. We don't read anywhere that he was sent at that time, but he went out to visit his people. And they're still on his mind, even though he's out 40 years later, an old man now, in our terms, an old man in terms of 80, 90, 100 years old, but he's 80, and he's getting older. Perhaps he still had that burden for his people. But now God says, I've heard. There's great, great verbs here. You know, I love the verbs that you see in the scriptures. I've heard. I've surely seen. And just as much as he saw the Hebrews' oppression, he sees your problems. He sees my problems. I've surely seen. Don't think you're alone in this. You know? Don't think you're alone in this. Don't think your family that's suffering is alone in this, in your walk. Okay? I've surely seen. I have heard their cry. He listens to our prayers. His people were oppressed and they were calling out to God. I know their sorrows. And he's not just a listening God and an understanding God, but he's an active God. And he says, I'm come down. Boy, that's good news for Moses. God's going to come down and release his people. God's going to come down. My father's going to come down and release the people and deliver them from bondage, just like Jacob was told. But then the next verse says, now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come up unto me, and I've also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppressed them. Come now, therefore, and I will send you unto Pharaoh. You know, and that's a great phrase. You know, Moses is thinking, wow, God's going to deliver his people, but all of a sudden, and he says, yeah, I've come down. But now he says, come now, therefore, and you, I will send you unto Pharaoh. The guy that wanted to kill you 40 years ago because he killed one of his men. Doesn't say that there, but that's the truth. That you may bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. Tables are turned. And Moses says, who am I? You know? Who am I? The old gospel quartet of the 50s, 60s, you know, was who am I that a king should breathe and live and die for? You know? And Moses wasn't thinking of that song because it wasn't written yet, but I thought you said you were going to come down and deliver your people. Who am I that I can deliver these people? But the key word was already in Moses' presence. And the key word was, I have come down. I have come down. So where was God? He was with Moses. You know? And that's important for us to know as God's servants, that he's not going to give us a job unless he's with us. If you're doing a job and you don't feel God's presence, you better examine that job, you know. If you have a mission or a ministry that you think you really have been called for, and then all of a sudden you don't see any evidence of God's presence there in your heart, is it your ministry or is it his ministry? You know, but he said, I have come down. Now you therefore go. And Bill McDonald, in his commentary on this section, says that God's call is your enablement. God's call is your enablement. That's a good one to write down. God's call is your enablement. He calls you to something. He's not going to leave you stranded. He's telling Moses, I'm going to come down and deliver my people. You're going to do it. I'm going to use you. I want to use you. That's what he says, actually. No, I want to use you. But we have to be willing servants, don't we? We have to be willing servants. Moses was God's chosen servant, chosen man. We have to be willing servants. Because if he calls us, he's going to enable us to accomplish that. We stay in his will. Well, that gives a whole different tenor to the chapter. And who am I that I should go in on a Pharaoh and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? And there's the phrase right there in verse 12, certainly I will be with you. And here's the sign. You're going to, not only will you bring them out, but you're going to bring them right back to this mountain. You'll be bringing them right back to this mountain. You'll serve God upon this mountain. That was the sign. Of course, he had a long ways to go in the next couple of weeks of ministry here in Exodus. He had a long ways to go to get there. And the people didn't think it was a great place when they were heading there, because they rather would have been back in Egypt, it says. But here's the sign. You'll be serving me when you get it, when you escape. You'll be serving me on this mount. So Moses willingly says, okay, let's go, right? No, no. We have to start, that starts a whole series of what I have down here, the excuses. Oh, he's primed. He's, by the way, the next blank is puzzled by the burning bush and primed for the role of deliverer. Okay, puzzled by the burning bush. He went over to the bush and primed for the role of deliverer. He's giving Moses the equipment. He's telling him what he wants him to do. Just like we used to prime the old hand pumps. Larry was talking about the steam engines this morning, you know, and I also remember over in Irma Kern's place and the Shetler's farm over there up by us, you know, you had to pour some water into the pump first to get it primed so you could start pulling up water out of that well, you know, and priming the pump. And he's priming Moses here. I'm going to be with you. I'll go with you. Moses has a half a second to think here. In verse 13, he says, look, when I go to the children of Israel, and shall say unto them, the God of your fathers has sent me unto you, and they say, what is his name? What shall I say unto them? Well, he's already thinking things, okay? And what will I say unto them? And oh, that beautiful phrase, God says to Moses, I am that I am. That's my name. This shall you say unto the children of Israel, I am has sent me unto you. And thus shalt thou say, the Lord God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob has sent me unto you. This is my name forever. And that was, but is my name forever. This is my memorial unto all the generations. And he gives them some further instructions. And over in, and that's a good section there to study. I don't have time to do that. But he mentions the names of the tribes and names of the nations that he's going to drive out in verse 17. And I think it was earlier where we read it in verse 8. Because, you know, he didn't want to say the West Bank and the Golan Heights and Hebron, you know. He didn't go into all that we know today. But he's talking about all the nations that dwelled in that land from about 50 miles north of the Sea of Galilee down to about 40 or 50 miles south of Jerusalem. And when he's talking about these different countries. And then he explains also what's going to happen when they walk out of that land. And the fact that Pharaoh's not going to let them go right away. So anyway, chapter 4, the excuses of the servant. The excuses of the servant. They will not believe, chapter 4, verse 1. Chapter 4 and verse 1. They will not believe. And nor hearken unto my voice. And they'll say, the Lord has not appeared unto you. And you know, they will not believe. They will not listen. In that same passage. They will not believe. They will not listen. And a neat answer for that is in verse 2. Our brother this morning took us to John 3:14. And it talked about that serpent that we're going to read about in the coming months when Israel is wandering. But here's another serpent. And he says, what's in your hand? And he says, a rod. And he says, throw it down on the ground. And it becomes a snake. It becomes a serpent. And Moses jumped. It says in verse 3, Moses fled from it. He was scared stiff. God ever asked you to do something and, you know, it really was beyond your comfort zone? He doesn't always put us in a comfort zone. That's easy. Sometimes he asks us to step out of that comfort zone. But here Moses casts down the rod and becomes a servant. Wow. Yikes. Different translation. But, you know, it's still there. Yikes. And Moses fled from it. And the Lord said unto Moses, put forth your hand and take it by the tail. He took forth his hand, took it by the tail, and becomes a rod. And put your hand inside your coat. He says in verse 5, that they may believe that the Lord God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, has appeared unto you. And the Lord furthermore said unto him, put your hand inside your cloak. And he puts his hand inside his cloak, and he pulls it out, and it becomes leprous. Or it was leprous by the time he got it out, right? Death sentence. Ostracism. Death sentence. Sometimes God does things to us that make us very uncomfortable. Because he's building us. Trials, tribulation works patience, right? Patience, experience, and experience, hope. He's developing some hope here. Long process, but he's developing hope. And he pulls it out and it's leprous. Now how can I lead my people? I can't even stay on the same side of the street. I've got to cover my mouth and say unclean. He knew what it was to be leprous. He knew it was a death sentence. Put your hand back inside your coat. He puts it back inside his coat. And in verse 6, and he pulls it out again, and it was in verse 7, and it was turned again as his other flesh. So he's developing this servant. I don't know how he's been developing you. Some of us here in this very room have gone through some really serious trials, you know, some really serious troubles, and wondered where God was leading you. And sometimes we don't have answers for that in this life, you know. I remember waking up one morning and my father-in-law had died the night before. Sandy and I were up in bed in the house over here with a bike motorcycle club. And it wasn't a motorcycle club then. But we were laying in bed and she cried herself to sleep, you know, kind of. And I was comforting her. And 2 or 3 in the morning when my brother-in-law comes pounding on the door and I wake up and I look up and there's flames coming out of the plaster up above my head. Kathy knows that feeling from going down, going out and having her house burned. And what's God trying to do here? No, I just lost my father-in-law. And Sandy lost her father. And now the house, now the apartment's burned up, you know. And you've got your own tragedies. You've got your own surprises that God put in your life or allowed Satan to do in your life. Looking at Job, we know it goes both ways. So anyway, he goes through a whole series of excuses here. They will not believe. They will not listen. What if they say that they will rebuke? The third one, they will rebuke. I am not eloquent. That's not what Stephen said about him. He said he was strong in words and wisdom. I am not eloquent. I'm slow of speech, verse 10. I'm slow of tongue. Then the final one, verse 13. Let's skip down to verse 13. Let's look at verse 11. The Lord said unto him, who has made man's mouth? He said, I'm a slow of speech and a slow of tongue. God says to him, who has made that tongue? Who's made that mouth? Why are you talking like that, man? I made your tongue. I made your mouth. Now therefore go, and I'll be with your mouth, and teach thee what thou shalt say. He uses the very same words that Moses bellyache to him about. Uses the very same. Do you ever do that with you? With me? Don't answer that out loud. And he said, oh my God, send I pray thee somebody else. Send I pray thee by the hand of him whom thou wilt send. And that just set God off the wall. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. And he said, isn't that Aaron the Levite, thy brother? I know he can speak well. Your older, your big brother. And also, behold, he comes forth to meet you. Aaron was out in, as far as we know, Aaron was still out in Egypt. Maybe he was heading east. And you'll speak unto him. Or he comes forth to meet you, and when he sees you, he'll be glad in his heart. And you'll speak unto him and put words in his mouth. And I'll be with thy mouth and with his mouth, and will teach you what you shall do. And you'll be his spokesman. He shall be thy spokesman unto the people. He shall be even he shall be to thee instead of a mouth, and you shall be to him instead of God. and also take this rod with thy hand, wherewith thou shalt do signs. So all the problems of Moses here, God had answers for. He has answers for our problems. He has answers for my problems, your problems. But we have to do something. Moses had to step out and do something. And we read in the rest of the passage that he headed out, went back to his father-in-law and told him he was going back to Egypt, picked up his family, and went back and met Aaron. Before he got there, in chapter 4, verse 24, God was ready to kill him, it says. Interesting passage. 4:14, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. And he said, nope, not that passage. Let's see, where is that? Verse 24, pardon me. Verse 24, it came to pass in the way of the inn that the Lord met him and sought to kill him, and Zipporah took a sharp stone and cut off the foreskin of her son, threw it at Moses' feet and said, surely you're a bloody husband. He hadn't circumcised his kids. In fact, we even read when Israel was walking across the desert, there was a time when the men had to be circumcised. They weren't following that practice in Egypt. We don't know whether they weren't able to or whether they were just in the world. They were adopting the things of the world and not doing it. But God almost killed him on the way over to meet Aaron. And then we read the rest of the section where he met Aaron, and God sent Aaron out in the wilderness, and he met him. And so he was prepared to obey. He was persecuted to circumcise. And when he followed God's order, he precipitated a following. And the elders of Israel believed when they saw the signs. He precipitated a following. And then at the end, in the last verse, the people believed, verse 31, the people believed, and when they heard that the Lord had visited the children of Israel and that he had looked upon their affliction, they bowed their heads and worshipped. Cool. Isn't that great? They believed and they worshipped. And as our brother Dave has spent, what, 4 meetings, I think, in August and September, on meeting where the Lord would have us to meet and remembering the Lord as priests and believers. Even Moses, when the people realized that God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, had come down and he was going to solve their problems. They didn't know how yet, but they trusted him and they worshiped. And we need to worship. We need to come and worship the Lord Jesus Christ and his Father. And they spent that time before Moses went into Pharaoh, before Aaron went into Pharaoh, in verse 31 of chapter 4. They bowed their heads and they worshiped. So, being God's chosen person. Now, you're not being called to lead Israel out of the whole dilemma with the Arabs today and with the Islam. But you may be being called to do something, whether it's in your home or whether it's in your community, whether it's a camp, whether it's helping others around the world in the missions. You know, our brother Paul used to send a lot of, be responsible for a lot of stuff going out in those containers from Toronto to Les and others out in Africa. You know, don't know what God's calling you to do and how he's interceding in your life. But Moses chose to obey. Wasn't excited about it in the beginning, you know. Who, me? Who am I? You know? And they won't listen. What if they don't believe? What if, you know, how many what ifs have we given God? And yet when he finally complied and he made the break with his father-in-law and those 40 years of comfort in the tents and 40 probably some of discomfort out in the wilderness, but he made the break and he obeyed just like Abraham had and left his family in Haran, then others believed. And as we obey, others will believe and worship. And that's the goal of the servant, is to bring a person to Christ so that they can worship. And all this other stuff that's going to happen in coming chapters was preceded by worship, by the elders. And let's be worshiping people as we obey God in whatever he's called you to do. Whatever he's called you to do. Wherever he sends you. Or maybe keeps you here in Blaisdell. But let's remember to obey, take on his call that he's given us, and worship. For it's our task. It's our privilege, so that others may come to him. Let's pray.